Thanks for tuning in to the Undercuts review of the 2026 Hungarian Grand Prix. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen, and enjoy the show.
By being a racing driver, you are under risk all the time. By being a racing driver means you are racing with other people. And if you no longer go for a gap that exists, you're no longer a racing driver.
Well, boys, the last race before the summer break, and what a doozy it was, in my opinion, obviously, the 2026 Hungarian Grand Prix. And Lando was able to make it done, although it was not looking simple all the way through, but quite a chaotic race in some respects. And like Martin pointed out to me before the podcast, that's five race winners in five races, right? So
five different race winners, yeah, for sure. I feel like this race, as a Ferrari fan, and I guess as different fans of different teams, I bet everybody had a different opinion, because I was watching this race from the perspective of what can Ferrari do to get in the mix. But I'm guessing, Jason, you were watching it from the perspective of, like, I don't know, maybe not, I don't even, not even sure, like, how can McLaren secure the win, or are we even, what was your perspective? I mean, were you pulling for Lando, Piastri?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm going to be honest. I feel badly that I felt this way, but I was pulling for Lando. I wanted him, like, even though all of what Oscar had to go through losing the championship last year and all that, just like, wow. I couldn't help but root for Lando. Because Lando was phenomenally quick.
Yeah.
He was so fast.
And he was stuck behind Piastri, and, you know, every driver stuck behind their teammate and say, I'm faster. He was way faster.
But he made a mistake, right? As Lando did, like last year when he was going for his world championship, he was constantly making mistakes. So he made a mistake on what? Turn four?
Two, three?
Yeah. Whatever. Exactly.
Like the left one.
Yeah, the left hand. Yeah, the back stepped out. He went too deep. The back stepped out. Piastri went through. And then that's kind of what happens in Formula One. You get stuck behind your teammate and
this is a notoriously difficult circuit to pass on.
Yeah.
Right? You just look, not just in the case of Lando behind Oscar, but you look at Lewis behind Kimi, mm-hmm. all throughout. I mean, Lewis behind Max. I mean, Max behind Lewis, maybe not, because that Max, you just sent it in a way that, like, that, you know, we're a couple of days removed now, and just by virtue of our respective schedules and stuff, but the like, years from now, the one thing that people will remember is Max's pass on Lewis. Lewis was trying to get by him, couldn't get by him. They went through the stops, and it he made it happen. Lewis got by, and then he was like, oh, I'm by now. He can't get by me. I mean, Lewis, seven-time world champion, you've got to think, he should be smarter than that. Why was he not covering off? I mean, I think that part of it may have been to do with he was giving a bit of blast on the battery to make sure that he got past, I think it was Liam Lawson at the time, in good shape, but whatever. On a track that's not supposed to be power limited, it seems like, did he run out of power on the straight? Either way, he just didn't cover off. He didn't move. He didn't cover off the overtake. And the one shot that Max got, he took, because it's Max. That's what he does. And it was a great overtake.
Yeah. I mean, insert Jason the Senna quote once again. If you see a gap and you don't go for it, you know, there it is. But no, that...
I don't think this was a controversial gap, though, in the same way as that quote is attributed.
No.
But at the same time, it's you open the door just a little bit, Max is going to stick his car in there. And, you know, in the same way, a little bit, it's like 2021 Abu Dhabi. I don't want to bring that one up again, but I don't know. It just seems like Lewis, his whole career has just been get in front and just go. And as soon as he's like put under threat, he doesn't defend very well.
I mean, maybe he's not had to too much.
He hasn't had to, but it's just a part of his game that he just doesn't take in the same way. Because you constantly look at, it's like he gets he's overtaken too easily. I'm sorry to say it. I'm a huge, huge fan. Not just in the last year and a half, Martin. Like through the full arc of Mr. Hamilton's career, like big Sir, fan of his.
Sir Hamilton.
Sir Lewis Hamilton, indeed. And he's always been great at overtaking. He's always been super fast. But the one thing that just sticks with me the whole time is like, especially when it's Max, he doesn't close the door like you would expect of a seven-time world champion.
Do you think it's just fear at this point? Not like fear he's going to die, like fear that Max is going to do something crazy, and we have come together so many times, and Max almost landed his car on top of my head one time.
It's a legit point to make, Martin. Steady
one
on.
Overtake.
But the point is, that's how Max has always been. Has always been sharp elbows. I'll take you out rather than let you come out of this corner ahead of me.
And as he overtook Hamilton, he got on the radio complaining that Hamilton was moving under braking or some rubbish, which was rubbish. I don't see that at all.
He didn't move at all.
He
moved late.
Great move by Max. Like one of those ones where it's like, I'm so far back, he's not going to expect this kind of thing. Like it's catch them napping kind of thing that you can just go, you know, for whatever reason. I'm not going to extrapolate it into a whole thing for this whole career. Lewis is easy to overtake, but
easy
great
target.
Move by Max. Yeah.
It was a great move. I mean, like I said before, we went down this whole thing. It's like, if the rest of the race was forgettable, which it wasn't, because it was compared to Spa last time out and Silverstone before, where they're very power dependent circuits and got people running out of energy and getting overtaken and then re-overtaken and just running out of juice. This was more like it's supposed to be. It was a good race in a way that the last two have just not suited these regulations.
I mean, here's a question for you. Let's move on a little bit, but what, based on what you just said around people changing positions and the orders, I'm trying to think, what was the starting order of the race versus what was the order of the cars after the end of the first lap? Like, because Norris was on pole, right? But Piastri led after the first lap was completed. For reasons we discussed. Leclerc started second. I think he crossed the line fifth after the first lap. Hamilton was definitely past him. Verstappen was past him.
Yeah.
You know, he was behind the dirty
side of
Norris.
The dirty side of the track. I mean, it's worth like 10 meters, I think they said. So which, when there's 8 meters between cars, it automatically puts you third and with
just
everything else.
It's just a massive mix up. And of course, well, dirty side of the track or not, like George Russell, once again, no luck. You know, if he didn't have any luck, it would only be bad luck or whatever the correct phrasing is. But I mean, he couldn't get off the line at all, could he? Anti-stall and everything.
He went into anti-stall. It was interesting. I don't know. Did you guys hear the drivers in the cool down room, the first three, when Kimi Antonelli kind of said, I don't know what this actually means. So infer no wisdom from this at all. But it's like he said something along the lines of, it looks like he got to the top of the packet.
Oh, yeah.
And it wiped out
the
battery or something. I don't know what the packet is, but I was like curious. What does that mean? But it basically, it looked like it was a pretty long start sequence. And it looks, and based on what he said, it almost sounds like George built up too much energy and he got to like 100% battery. And when you do that, it basically cuts all the battery or something bananas like that. And so he got off the line and just had nothing. And when he had nothing off the line, that's what put it into anti-stall. And he had to, you know, just like if you're trying to save your car from stalling when you drive a manual transmission, the first thing you do before it stalls is you put the clutch in. He puts the clutch in and tries to restart. But then you've got to go through the whole sequence again because there's a science to it all. And basically, long and short of it was, he started, what, seventh on the grid?
He was when he was down there.
I forget where he started.
He was on the dirty side of the track, so he must have been an even number. So he was probably 6 or 8, one of those. Yeah, 6.
But he was back in 21st.
Oh, he was
by the time they got to the first corner, and he battled his way back to 6th. So the pace in the car was there. It's just that he had a lot of cars to get through, like 15 or so of them, by the between the start of the race and the end.
I mean, we didn't see much of George the whole race, but because of his, you know, the start, you know, messed him up so badly. But yeah, I mean, we're just writing him off race after race now. We can't write him off anymore. He's barely in the.
I think that the summer break has come at a good time. He can just go to Monaco and do some jet skiing, and whatever he needs to do to get his mind off it. I think Kimi Antonelli is just going go-karting constantly for the whole time.
Can you be sad on a jet ski? I don't think you can.
I have been sad on a jet ski I'm not very good on sea. I'm definitely a landlubber, and my wife and I, we may not have even been married at that point. Maybe just married. We went to Grand Cayman. We went out to Stingray City, but we didn't want to do the boat thing. We just got jet skis and we went out there, and then. Because we'd spent like more than you really should for a couple of jet skis, they felt obliged to take us snorkeling, and they took us to this cove where it was like really, really choppy. And so I basically rode this jet ski in, like hurling off the side of it the whole way in, because so I was just like so
seasick. Is it possible to be sad on a jet ski in Monaco when you're a Formula One driver?
Well, I'm not a Formula One driver, but Monaco versus Grand Cayman. Grand Cayman's very nice.
Grand Cayman's very nice. I've been to Stingray City, but not on a jet ski.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
Get the boat.
I was just trying to make a funny joke. I wasn't supposed to send us on such a tangent.
Well, I guess such is life, Martin.
I'll wait for the George Russell sad on a jet ski memes to be posted.
Well,
I don't think
we're
be
talking
sad.
About sad. If we're talking about sad things, we might as well talk about Carlos, right?
Ugh.
Was that a turning point in the race? I mean, great segue, Jason. I appreciate that. seemingly, there was an issue throughout the whole race with basically everyone being shown blue flags. Blue flags were just flashing all left, all right, whatever. And from what I understand and have heard and read a little bit about over the last day or so, is that it's GPS-driven automated system, and it flashes, and normally it shows your car number underneath or whatever, but basically just the blue thing was flashing at everyone, like willy-nilly. Right.
You're trying to work out who's it for? Is that for me? How close they are?
Yeah.
Is
it, and so eventually it gets to the point, it's like, well, I'm getting blue flags again. Is there anyone around? And da-di-da. I mean, Carlos should know better. It wasn't like Oscar just showed up on the straight between turns 1/2 and 2/3, right? So Carlos would be the first person to complain about someone doing that to him, right?
Right.
Such as
when he was in his Ferrari a couple of years ago.
Yeah, sure. I mean, even now, I guess, but I get the argument that the type of turn, the angle and all of that, he didn't see him and that's why they hit. But he should have known he was there
Well, the engineers should be in his ear, right?
They should, 100%. I
mean, was he not? Or she?
I don't know. Who knows?
We don't know.
I don't know.
But anyway, point being, Carlos did get a 5-second penalty, right?
Yeah.
Rather than a 10 because they mitigating or whatever, but they called him to the stewards and all that sort of stuff. But anyway, yeah, did it ruin Oscar's race? I don't think so. Was it the reason that Lando got by? Maybe because of where it came in that Oscar had pitted a few laps earlier. He was making up. Lando went a little bit longer. But the fact is, Lando was stuck behind Oscar. As soon as Oscar pitted, because they were covering Lewis, I think at that point, right? Then they had to pit Piastri. Lando was calling saying he wanted to be pitted, to be undercut and get by. Of course, McLaren rules of engagement, that's not going to happen. So they once Lewis pitted, they pitted Piastri. But what that basically did was it that freed up Lando to use up the rest of his tires, and he was way quicker. You know, the undercut was supposed to be pretty strong on this track, but Lando just blew straight through that, even with old tires. Now, I don't think Oscar was particularly good on the hard tire compared to the medium. And I'm going on a bit at length here because this was really the turning point of the race. And Lando, I think, was really on it. And yes, if they hadn't touched Oscar and Carlos, it would have been closer when Lando came out of the pits. But I you know, Lando was the quicker guy. So
yeah,
who really cares? The faster guy won on the day.
Yeah. I mean, I said the same to Martin before we started. It looked like it was waiting impossible. For me.
You mean? Say it.
You might have been there. I don't remember. But yeah, exactly the same that you said. He might have overcut him anyway. I mean, likely not. He likely still would have come out behind, but he would have been on fresher tires and way faster. So. Probably would have happened in the end anyway, but yeah. Unfortunate nonetheless.
You saw the tire offset when Lewis came out, and was it Hadjar? And he just drove right around the outside of him at the hairpin right-hander, turn five or whatever it was. There was a big difference in the tires.
The same with Lando when he was behind Kimi, right? When he came out, he just drove right around Kimi before Kimi made his last stop.
Yeah, that's right.
But I mean, I guess it's and in our minds, it's somewhat moot, right? Because obviously Piastri's gearbox gave up. So whether he was probably going to give up, whether he was in the lead or in second place, either way, right? But tough to take for Oscar. Going back to the garage and then watching his teammate win the race, and him getting 0 points, that's got to be a tough one.
Yeah. But yeah. I think, you know, McLaren bought a ton of upgrades and they've really worked. Which is good to see. Obviously, we talked after Spa about the difference that the new Mercedes engine had made that Lando had in the last race that Oscar didn't. I didn't quite keep track in terms of did Oscar get the new engine, but obviously they were very, very close. So I'm assuming he did. So I think that McLaren, they exceeded their own expectations.
Yeah,
this race. I don't think that they were expecting to be competing for the win. I think that they thought that perhaps they'd be able to compete for a podium. But after Friday, it looked like it was Ferrari's race. And Ferrari, I don't know, Martin, I don't want to pile on here, but you kind of hinted at it a little bit earlier on, but they have to have been disappointed from being in a position where they were on Friday and into early Saturday. Obviously, with Lewis and the whole Piastri blocking incident that put him three spots back, even it was not Ferrari's finest hour for a track that should have really suited them better.
Yeah, everything that was successful for Ferrari this weekend seemed that it came not because they were good, but because other people kind of either messed up or, you know, obviously Leclerc was P2 for qualifying, but only because other people got penalized, you know, for yellow flag infringements or whatever. And then it was clear off the line and in the race, they had the pace to be in the mix, but then they couldn't quite get it done. They seem to have fixed their issues around strategy for the most part. The last few races, they've had some really good calls. And even pitting Hamilton at the end there for fresh tires when Kimi and Verstappen stayed out, I thought was the right call. It didn't work out. But yeah, they weren't making things happen themselves. It was just they were just in the whatever was happening was a result of other teams maybe messing up more than them doing it themselves. And of course, Hamilton speeding in the pit lane at the
four
end.
Four penalties in three weekends.
That's now it's becoming sort of Alonso-esque, right? Yeah. Where Alonso was constantly having bad luck, you know, with his Alpine or whatever it was a few years ago. Now Hamilton is just picking up penalties like left and right.
But the the qualifying penalty against Piastri, that was just brutal. Because you could hear, it's like, wait, he was on a lap? You could hear, they'd not even told him. And he just finished his lap.
Yeah.
And because they sent, the Ferrari guys went out first and McLaren went out last. But when Lewis finished his lap, he's not used to there being so many people behind him.
Right.
That would have been on a hot lap. He kind of thought the session was over, and maybe it's just a mental lapse on his part. But they should have said, Piastri's coming up behind you on a lap.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting point, because as viewers, you know, live, I think we have access to more information, and we're given more information than almost the drivers are. I mean, you can't.
The drivers get no information other than what comes through their ear.
Right.
And you, the guys on the pit wall, have a ton more information than we do.
And you constantly hear the drivers are always complaining, like, don't talk to me in the braking zone. Don't talk to me when I'm doing this. Don't talk to me when I'm doing that. Leave me, Kimi Raikkonen, you know, leave me alone. I know what I'm doing. You know, we love those radios. And the Ferrari chats post race, you know, are talking, you know, maybe not necessarily conspiracy theory, but they're talking about how Leclerc was told about Hamilton's 5-second penalty, many laps before they told Hamilton. But then other people are saying, well, Hamilton was fighting Kimi at the time, so they didn't want to, you know, bother him with information that isn't going to change. So who knows, right? Monday morning quarterbacking, but yeah. How do you get the information to the driver? You think that they know everything that's going on, but they've got their hands full. And yeah, maybe it's just the way it goes. Although speeding in the pit lane, though, why? I mean, the Monaco thing was one thing, cutting corners. How can you speed in the pit lane in Hungary? What happened there?
Yeah. And like, you know, Jason, you saw like, Anthony Davidson on the Sky Pad. I don't know which coverage you were watching. If I manage to watch it live, I watch it on Sky, but then on the replay, it's usually the F1 crew. So I was watching it live, and Anthony Davidson was watching, going, I cannot see how he speeded. It must have been this, they must have set the whole thing wrong, because it's 80 kilometers per hour and they give them 0.5 of a buffer. So he was actually going 80.6, which is 0.1 over. But it's like, just set it for 80. The fraction that you're out, I mean, that's not the difference. It might be the difference between getting across the safety car line before Kimi.
Right.
So maybe it was. Maybe it was the difference, but it wasn't at the end of the day. I don't know.
I mean, who knows? I could go conspiracy. Sorry, Jason, did I cut you off? But
it's like it's been the Martin and Nick show for the last 5 minutes. I was trying to loop you in, dude.
I appreciate it. But I mean, what is there to say? You know, I don't have the telemetry readings, right? I mean, was he speeding or wasn't he speeding? Who knows?
If Hamilton, okay, I'm just making this up off the top of my head now. But if Hamilton knows that there is that half a kilometer an hour buffer, and he knows whatever's been set on his car, and he knows how tight it's going to be with Kimi, maybe he thinks he can flip it off just a few meters before the line, and the buffer will carry him through.
But that was the whole thing with Anthony Davidson. He was like, he broke it down slow motion, and was like, he braked in, and then as they went across the line, it was like, you know, it falls into that steady state.
Yeah.
And then when he was going to the line, he hit the button, or he released the button, or hit the button, whatever it was, to speed up. And he looked at it and he was analyzing it. And it's like, the second he crossed the line, he was gone. It wasn't that he was increasing early or doing anything. I think this was a Ferrari error.
But then why wouldn't it have happened on every pit stop then? I mean, anyway, whatever. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it didn't make that much difference for Ferrari. It was Leclerc ahead of Hamilton instead of Hamilton ahead of Leclerc. It didn't matter. Hamilton couldn't get by Kimi. You know, maybe he shouldn't have stopped, but I didn't think it was a terrible call. And fair play to Kimi, right? What a weekend for him.
Great race for him. And Max, which we haven't really spoken about him either, even though he complained the whole race through, he still finished in P2.
1,000%, Jason, 1,000%. The truest thing that's been said on this podcast. The guy is never happy. it's kind of frustrating. Like, dude, come on. Like,
he's a perfectionist. That's how he is.
Yeah, and that's just spoiled from winning so much.
I mean, that's how I feel, Jason, too. I mean, that's crazy. But yeah, well played to Max. I mean, that overtaking maneuver, we spoke about that. But solid race, and solid race from Kimi to, you know, get demoted from his qualifying position, but then make his way back to the podium.
Yeah.
Beating everybody that is close to him in the championship, so extending his lead. You know, Norris winning and Verstappen coming second ahead of him is, you know, still a net gain.
If you're going to finish third, this is the kind of circumstances you want around your third place finish, right?
I mean, driving like a guy that's, you know, 29 when he's 19, you know, he's not putting a wheel wrong so far. And,
I mean, another team that's also seemingly, you know, in perspective for where they are in the grid, but Racing Bull is another double points scoring weekend. I mean, they're just dominating the midfield.
Alpine. I think they were tied on Alpine with like, what, 61 points, I think it was. Don't quote me on that, but they were tied with Alpine coming into this weekend. Obviously, double points finish, no points for Alpine with Gasly in 12th and Colapinto in 16th. But that's some, again, solid points. Lawson in 8th and Lindblad in 10th.
Yeah. And Nico finally getting some points this year for Nico Audi.
Hülkenberg. Actually, I mean, it's really Audi versus Racing Bulls at this point. Obviously, Racing Bulls, I think, is doing the better job. They're consistently getting two cars in the points. Audi are doing a solid job. I think their engine's down on power, but they're, you know, because it's new. Not that the Red Bull powertrains isn't, but there you go. They're doing a solid job. Both teams. Lindblad, I saw some interview afterwards. He didn't seem happy because he's been beaten by his teammate. But I do appreciate their on-track battles. That's how, like, two teammates should go at each other in a race, hard but fair. Nudge each other, elbows out, a little bit of running each other off the track, just enough to kind of not get, well, no one's complaining to the stewards when it's the teammates just getting a little bit pushy, right? So I just like the whole way that they're going racing right now at Racing Bulls. And two drivers that are really well paired. I like that driver lineup.
Yeah, it's really working out for them. It's like what we expected from Williams is what Racing Bulls is doing. So super impressive from them. I think that's
last week. What about, I made a bold prediction.
We are in sync, Mr. Watterson. We are in sync. I was about to bring it up, but I'm going to give you some kudos too.
It wasn't a bold prediction, but it was kind of a prediction.
It was a bold prediction. That was how you set it up. And yes, your prediction was wrong. Your prediction was Aston to score points, I believe.
Yes. But was it 13th and 14th or 14th and 15th?
13th and 14th, yeah.
Respectable.
It was respectable.
Without their best weekend by far.
Yeah. There wasn't six retirements, you know, that moved
that's
them.
That's right. They were racing against people. Yes. Other cars. Williams's, Alpines. Yeah. They were racing.
Yeah. They didn't quite get there. I mean, Stroll beat Alonso.
Driver of the day.
I mean, 13th position. I mean, he was only, well, hang on. It's hard to say. I don't see in my thing here how far he was behind.
Oh, because they were laps at that point, were they?
They were all lapped.
They were
a
lap down. But I mean.
But they were only one lap down.
It's got to be good.
Behind
news.
Them, like, so 13th, 14th were Lance and Fernando. Behind them, Franco Colapinto was two laps down.
All right. Well, how far in that lap were they behind? I don't know. But
nobody knows.
They weren't. No. How could anybody possibly know? That's information that's been lost to time.
Lost to time, yes.
maybe archaeologists will discover what actually happened in the future. But, I mean, you believed it almost came true. You needed just a couple more retirements at the front. A collision at the front could have possibly got them a point. You never know.
Yeah.
They're in the mix.
Yeah. Well, so a good weekend for them. Now, as I understand, that was just the car upgrade, the chassis upgrade, which they said was worth about 2 seconds. I kind of put it this way. Maybe it was close to, but compared to every other upgrade that Aston Martin have brought in the last 5 years, this is a glorious success. Because I think one thing that's blighted them throughout is, like, even when you think back to when Fernando was on the podium in Bahrain and he pulled off those fantastic maneuvers against Lewis and Carlos, right? Throughout the season, the development war, they just went backwards. They've never delivered an upgrade, certainly in their Aston Martin guys. You know, going back Racing Point and Force India, yes, maybe. But since they've become Aston Martin, they've never, ever delivered an upgrade during the course of the season that's worked successfully. They've finally got that monkey off their back, I think. And in Zandvoort, I think there's a Honda engine upgrade that could maybe not give them 2 seconds, but it could maybe give them a quarter of a second, a third of a second, which might get them pushing towards Q1.
I mean, they beat both Williamses, they beat both Haases, and they were sandwiched in between the Alpines
and beat both Cadillacs. Who kind of beat themselves?
All right,
I mean, they're a new team. The brake issues that Bottas had are like constantly plaguing them. Was Perez another suspension issue? I can't remember what took him
out. Yes, his like wheel fell off pretty much, didn't it? And he drove around the whole track on one wheel, on three wheels. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're a new team. You've got to cut them a bit of slack. I think in terms of performance, they're doing a decent job, as well as anyone could really have ever expected of them. But it's just, this is difficult. This is difficult.
Yeah. Well, I guess that brings us to Coupes F1.
Jesus. Well, why don't you give us the Coupes F1? I mean, you can go to the website just as much as anybody, Jason.
I mean, the only one that really matters is the one that scored the most points on the week. You know, that's really all that matters.
So what happened there then? I've not looked.
J Lazzy 92 with the top score this week, 240 points. He drank that papaya juice.
I was worried.
It tasted good.
It worked out in the end.
I mean, looking at your picks, you had Lando first, 40 points. You had Oscar in seventh. Like, you believed in Lando, but not Oscar? I mean,
I told you.
Damn, bro. I mean, hey, it worked out. I'm not going to say, but, you know, could have been a lot. Could have been, you know, egg on your face there.
Actually, I also had Oscar in seventh. I'm looking at my picks now.
You didn't have Lando in first,
though. I had him on the podium, though. I had him in third.
Fair enough. Yes. Yeah, so let's see who else got high scores. Peachtree 513 with 230 points and freaking Fast Frank with 228. Overall, Beavotero holds on to top spot. The original Team Williams up three places to second. Matt D down one to first. J Lazzy up to sixth overall, up four spots. You were like an also ran at the start of the season.
Sugarcoat it, won't you, Martin?
Yeah, but you're storming up the table.
But like, close. But 240 points for the best score of the week, which is 10 clear of the next best score, highly respectable. Highly respectable.
Is this the last time I'm going to mention Toto's Underwash? Probably not, because I love the name. Down.
That's Underwashes.
They tamed in, I can't do my German pronunciation, but they stayed in eighth spot. But Jason ahead of them. I actually popped up 10 spots to 67th. And Nick, right on my heels in 75th, up 21 places. Only 9 points between us now. So, all to play for.
It's still pretty tight. I mean, even though you guys are, 75 back, you're only 200 points away from first, which is highly irregular.
I mean, there's a lot more points available, but I know, Jason, I don't know what season. I've been doing this for 23 years, and I've never finished top three. Nick with his multiple trophies.
I think the news isn't very new. You can't quite see that on my phone. Catalunya results updated to reflect Colapinto penalty. That's not very
new. Oh, well, I only put, that's not news. That's just like when I have to make edits to the
retraction,
to the scores for
breaking
for late penalties.
Yeah.
There is double news. McLaren DNFs last year or disqualifications last year.
There is news, right, that there's an additional Grand Prix, right?
There is, the Bahrain Grand Prix.
The Bahrain Grand Prix is going to be in Malaysia?
That's right.
Yeah.
At some point, I forget exactly what date it's going to be. But
it's in the Malaysia.
It's going to be the
week.
Really hot. Yes, it is. It's the week before the Singapore Grand Prix.
Okay, so between Azerbaijan really and Singapore. Okay,
that's
Azerbaijan
right.
on the 26th and Singapore on October 11th. So
yeah,
that's
so
going to be
a triple header.
Triple header there.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's the last Malaysian Grand Prix was when my son was 3 days old.
Yeah.
It was It was like October 1st or 2nd or whatever it was. 2017. So there's not been a race at Sepang since 2017. Good circuit. I don't quite know how it's going to be with this current generation of cars, because you got a long straight to the final corner and a long straight to the first corner. So we could have shades of Spa in there because there's not enough opportunity to regen after
power.
That first straight.
Yeah.
But it's a twisty. There's lots of opportunity to like charge the rest of the time. So I don't know. I'm just glad that we've got a race back in what year, like in future years, F1 trivia will be in what country, hosted the 2026 Bahrain Grand Prix.
It was in Kuala Lumpur.
But yeah, I mean, just glad to get a race back. And glad to be on a legit track as well.
Yeah.
Hopefully the current generation of cars doesn't mess it up for everyone. But it's a good track. It's a good track.
Yeah.
Just got our first bolt of thunder in the background.
All right. And now we have like a 3.5 week break as we record until the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Unless we get some crazy silly season stuff that drastically changes what to expect. Which I don't see happening.
No, I mean, it's all going to be. It's going to happen. Do you think is it Alonso's decision that's going to start? Going to be the first domino to fall.
So
Max is
going like
to make
Seb,
a decision.
Like Seb a few years ago when he dropped the news that he wasn't coming back, and then all of a sudden the silly season kicked off.
Right. Everything kicked
but
off.
Fernando. This weekend's update hadn't worked. Fernando would have probably announced his retirement over the course of the next 3 weeks. It's delivered some promise. Maybe he's going to hold off. I don't know.
He could go, but would Alpine want him back?
I mean, at this point, he'd probably just cash in his chips.
I don't know.
Would that be his fourth time
to let go.
At that team in different iterations, right?
Right. Between Renault
twice
else.
And Alpine twice. I don't know. Whatever.
Lotus.
I don't know what it was.
Were they at one point?
I think he's the guy who's going to make
just
the
call
first
him
move. It's
yeah,
not
potentially.
It's not going to be a Lewis Hamilton situation where he like announces it, you know, like a year ahead before it happens.
He's going back to Mercedes after the end of next year.
But yeah, we'll see. Well, but yeah, all stuff could happen. But yeah, quite a bit of time off between now and the next race.
He has to give up the corner. I had to bounce ahead. What is wrong with these people?
Thanks for listening to the Undercuts review of the 2026 Hungarian Grand Prix. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be back after the summer break for the 2026 Dutch Grand Prix. We'll see you there.